From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week I've actually chosen three different articles that I think enlighten practice in areas that are common to all of us. I'm going to talk about the PROGUE 18 trial comparing prasugrel to ticagrelor in patients with acute MI treated with primary PCI. We'll review a paper which looks at transplantation of human embryonic stem cell-derived cardiovascular progenitors for severe ischemic left ventricular dysfunction, which was published in JACC, and also a very nice review looking at antithrombotic therapy in peripheral arterial disease, really focusing on some of the newer trials that are beginning to inform this part of our practice. So let's start with PROGUE 18. This was a randomized trial. The goal was to evaluate the treatment with prasugrel versus ticagrelor among patients with ST segment elevation MI undergoing primary percutaneous coronary intervention. There were roughly 1,200 patients randomized equally to prasugrel versus ticagrelor. The duration of follow-up was a month. The mean age was 62. About a quarter of them were women, and about 20% had diabetes. Exclusion included a prior history of stroke or serious bleeding or ongoing anticoagulation therapy or severe liver disease. The primary outcome was the incidence of death, reinfarction, or urgent target vessel revascularization, stroke, serious bleeding requiring transfusion, or prolonged hospitalization at 7 days. And that occurred essentially equally in the two groups, 4% in the prasugrel group and 4.1% in the ticagrelor group. Secondary outcomes, including cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI, or stroke, were infrequent and seen in 2.7% of prasugrel versus 2.5% of ticagrelor. The TIMI major bleeding was also similar, 0.6 versus 0.7, respectively, for prasugrel versus ticagrelor. At 1 year, the cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI, or stroke rates were also similar, 6.6% in prasugrel versus 5.7% in the ticagrelor group. No differences statistically. So the trial, which was published in JACC very recently, showed a similar efficacy and bleeding for either prasugrel or ticagrelor given to patients undergoing primary PCI. And certainly this, I think, adds to our knowledge base as we think about which antiplatelet therapy to offer patients who undergo primary PCI, where the lion's share, of course, are on aspirin, and we're adding a second agent to the aspirin background. The second article I wanted to talk about was a very small series published in JACC looking at the use of human embryonic stem cell-derived cardiovascular progenitors. And, you know, we think about how many different studies have been done thinking about the potential value of stem cells to improve poor left ventricular dysfunction. And I think this is the latest paper I've seen on the topic, which looks at the clinical potential of this unique possibility. You know, for years we've had this imagination that if we could transplant the heart one cell at a time, wouldn't it be great to essentially replace or improve heart muscle function in people with terrible left ventricular systolic function? So this was a series of just 6 patients, and it asked the question, is it feasible and safe to transplant cardiovascular progenitors derived from human embryonic stem cells to a previously infarcted myocardium during a bypass operation? 6 patients who had severe LV systolic dysfunction and previous MI were undergoing CABG, and they received a unique therapy, an epicardial fibrin patch that was embedded with human embryonic stem cell-derived cardiovascular progenitors. The patients were then monitored for a year, looking for tumor formation, whether they had arrhythmias, whether there was any evidence of alloimmunization, and what happened with LV function and quality of life at 1 year. One patient died of postoperative complications not related to the treatment. No tumor or arrhythmias were detected during follow-up using sensitive imaging, including CT, PET, and ICD interrogation. Three patients had silent alloimmunization. All the patients appeared to have improved with increases in systolic motion of the cell-treated segments. One patient died 22 months after CABG from heart failure. The authors concluded that human embryonic stem cell-derived treatment with progenitors embedded in a fibrin patch was feasible and should be supported in terms of a larger trial. You and I both know that cell replacement therapies to repair the infarcted myocardium have just been so promising and yet so frustrating. It's thought that the type of cell and the delivery methods have been suboptimal up until now. And based on some preclinical studies, these investigators really did a novel thing. They created a highly purified population of cardiovascular progenitor cells from human embryonic stem cells and then mixed them with fibrinogen and thrombin to form a gel that then they could place in the pericardial pocket. It's unclear what the mechanism was by which this model of therapy improved wall motion. It could involve secretion of salutary extracellular vesicles by the transplanted cells, perhaps. But identifying the mechanism by which these myocardial segments improved would be critical to guide future attempts and maybe a much larger trial that would look at both feasibility and potentially efficacy of this type of therapy. We are all fascinated by the potential of stem cell therapies for heart disease, and certainly we've seen the type of success they've enjoyed in the cancer-related fields, and we're just waiting for someone to solve the problem for LV dysfunction. Hopefully, help is on the way with this type of therapy. The last article I wanted to review briefly was a very excellent review that was published in JACC looking at antithrombotic therapy in peripheral artery disease, and particularly looking at some of the newer evidence. So a few key points to remember. First, of course, atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease kills more than 200 million adults worldwide each year. Lower extremity peripheral artery disease is associated with major morbidity and mortality. 5 to 10% of PAD patients have recurrent cardiovascular events each year. We also recall that most PAD patients are asymptomatic, and those that are symptomatic may have classic intermittent claudication, but some of them have asymptomatic or atypical, mildly atypical leg pain or foot pain. They can have ischemic pain at rest and, of course, ulceration and gangrene. Patients with PAD have elevated risk of cardiovascular death, MI, and stroke. And the annual risk of cardiovascular death, MI, or hospitalizations is a whopping 21%. The annual risk of major adverse limb events, including, unfortunately, amputation, varies from 2 to 10%, depending on the age and so forth. In our country, the USA, the medical treatment of PAD is traditionally including an antiplatelet monotherapy, either with aspirin or clopidogrel. And this is associated with a 25% risk reduction in major events. Interestingly, even though we know that PAD is a CAD risk equivalent, the use of antiplatelet therapy and statin therapy in these patients appears to be substantially less than in patients with known CAD. So one huge opportunity for us in our practices is to identify patients with PAD, both clinical and subclinical, and try to improve the quality of their care in secondary prevention, beginning with antiplatelet therapy and statin therapy. For patients who are symptomatic, despite excellent medical therapy, presumably including an antiplatelet drug and statin, cilostazol and supervised exercise training have been associated with improved walking distance and quality of life. There are very few proven methods to deal with critical limb ischemia where the mortality rate is 50-50 at 1 year. Now we'll move on to a couple of the newer things that have come up in this field. There's an agent called vorapaxar. It's a protease-activated receptor 1, a PAR-1 inhibitor that has been shown to reduce cardiovascular death, MI, or stroke by 1.2% compared to placebo. This is a modest benefit. There was a lower risk of hospitalization, but there was an increase in moderate and severe bleeding associated with vorapaxar use, And so I think the jury is still out in terms of whether this agent will find a significant role. Now we get to COMPASS. This was a very large trial published recently looking at patients with stable atherosclerotic vascular disease who were randomized to one of three arms, aspirin 100 milligrams a day, rivaroxaban 500 milligrams twice daily, or aspirin 100 milligrams a day plus rivaroxaban 2.5 milligrams twice daily. In the group of patients with stable atherosclerotic disease, at 2 years follow-up, use of rivaroxaban 2.5 plus aspirin was associated with lower rates of MI, ischemic stroke, and cardiovascular death. So the absolute risk was 4.1% in the treated group versus 5.4% in the group with aspirin alone. There was a higher risk of major bleeding with combination therapy, 3.1% versus 1.9%. So to gain 1.3% lower rate of MI, ischemic stroke, or cardiovascular death, one gave up a 1.2% risk of major bleeding. In the COMPASS trial, for the patients who had PAD, rivaroxaban 2.5 twice a day plus aspirin was also associated with lower rates of MI, ischemic stroke, and cardiovascular death, 5.1% versus 6.9%. The risk of major bleeding again was higher with the combination therapy group, 3.1% versus 1.9%. So for the PAD patients, the benefit was an absolute risk reduction in MI, ischemic stroke, cardiovascular death of 1.8%. The trade-off, an increase in major bleeding of 1.2%. I think the COMPASS trial is probably the first of many that we'll see looking at the potential use of combination therapy to see if we can get a reduction in ischemic complications with an acceptable risk of bleeding. A couple other trials that you should watch for. One of them is called Voyager PAD. Patients with PAD are randomized to rivaroxaban 2.5 milligrams twice daily or placebo in addition to aspirin after peripheral or endovascular PAD revascularization. This will be an interesting trial to watch for. And the other, BEST CLI study. These are patients with critical limb ischemia that are randomized open-label to either surgery or endovascular revascularization in addition to BEST medical therapy for that condition. Certainly, I think the publication of the COMPASS trial, and particularly the PAD cohort in COMPASS, allows us to see the potential of beginning to combine antithrombotic therapies in peripheral arterial disease. Obviously, we need more trials to begin getting more nuances in who will benefit from this unique strategy. Well, I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. We've covered several topics that I thought were interesting in this week's list of journal articles that we review. This is your weekly update from ACC.org. All of these studies can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next week, I hope you have an excellent week. Thank you.